Our second scripture reading this morning is 2 Thessalonians 3, 6 to 13. In the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, we command you, brothers, to keep away from every brother who is idle and does not live according to the teachings you received from us. For you yourselves know how you ought to follow our example. We were not idle when we were with you, nor did we eat anyone's food without paying for it. On the contrary, we worked night and day, laboring and toiling, so that we would not be a burden to any of you. We did this not because we do not have a right to such help, but in order to make ourselves a model for you to follow. For even when we were with you, we gave you this rule: if a man will not work, he shall not eat. We hear that some among you are idle. They are not busy. They are busybodies. Such people we command and urge in the Lord Jesus Christ to settle down and earn the bread they eat. And as for you, brothers, never tire of doing what is right.
Thank you, Betsy. I did not want to preach on that passage today. But as often happens, the one that you look at and say, I'm not touching that one, it works in your mind, and then you think, well, maybe it'd be a service if we did talk about that. Didn't really want to talk about it because this particular passage has been used to divide people. It's been used to choose your political party. It's been used to either support or to tear down the idea of social programs for those who are unfortunate. You can imagine what kind of controversy a passage like this might cause, and it has, and depending how ministers approach it. It's also a little bit hard to preach on this passage after spending 5 days in Florida and just getting back Friday, which is what we did. It wasn't a vacation. We did some work down there. A number of you wished us a good vacation, and I didn't correct that. And make no mistake, we spent some time just sitting. I appointed myself as the lifeguard at my brother's pool. There's a bench right at a seat right at the corner, and I sat there quite a bit. In fact, this sermon was prepared there, a lot of it. It crossed my mind that if you like this sermon, I'll be glad to go back there and prepare some more in that particular spot. Nobody was ever swimming in that pool, but I was the lifeguard. The whole idea of vacation versus work sometimes is interesting. It helps, as always, to look at the cultural context of why Paul would write such a thing. Because we know that Paul was concerned about those who maybe didn't have a job, that were unable to work. So why would he write this? What was happening in that particular time? I'm reminded of the teaching from Deuteronomy chapter 15, verse 11, and I'm learning the power of a book like Deuteronomy, which I've never paid a whole lot of attention to, but there's such strong things there that transcend the ages. Chapter 15, verse 11 says, "Since there will never cease to be some in need on the earth, I therefore command you, open your hand to the poor and needy in your land." That's an Old Testament teaching which Jesus affirmed in the Sermon on the Mount. So what's going on in Paul's time? Well, one of the things that is different in our culture versus the culture of the New Testament is the idea of the community versus the rights of the individual. In our Western society, we elevate the rights of each individual and try and promise freedom and give everybody equal opportunity, which is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. In fact, uplifting the rights of the individual has helped make a better society for our culture, I feel. But in Paul's time, the idea of the community as a whole and everybody sharing as part of that was very important. It was especially important because they were under Roman rule. There was a lot of freedom that was not enjoyed like we enjoy it today. There was a lot of persecution. It was important for that community to stay together. Our Sunday school class that we just heard about that shared, that's a great way to support the community. There's support that can be found there. The ordination process that we have undertaken in our congregation is a good example of the molding together of the community and the individual, the inner and outer call, if you will, that Connie has experienced. Connie first experienced the outer call
when at the suggestion of Marcus Smucker, the congregation here felt like it would be good to have a person who gave time to care and nurture in the congregation, Marcus suggested Connie, asked me, do you think she could do that? I said, she can. I don't know if she will. And sure enough, her first response was, I can't do that. But with a little bit of discerning in the congregation and the feeling of that outer call being placed on her, she agreed to do that. And then we unleashed a monster, didn't we? We found out how gifted she was, and she traveled to Minneapolis, Minnesota by herself, got into a room that wasn't a good one where she was, had to change where she was staying, and did all that by working up an Uber account and taking rides. And the fact that she can exist completely by herself without me was a little disconcerting, but she did it and did the boundaries training there and has taken that across conference lines and has worked on the safety church program that we have in our church and has ministered to a number of persons that a man could not have ministered to. And so in that regard, her inner call started working. And she felt like if she could be ordained, this would give her opportunity to do even more across the community of faith. So that was her individual calling, which she brought to the church. And your affirmation then was needed to provide that. And it was provided a couple weeks ago. Out of all the votes that were taken that were considered official, it was 100% affirmation. There were two votes that weren't affirmative, but one was not signed, and one kind of had some scribbling on it. So we're looking at it that way. And even if those votes were counted, it's about 98.5% or something like that. So the community has spoken. And so next Sunday, this ordination process will happen. And part of the reason it's happening in the morning is because she feels it's important that you as the community are involved in this whole process. So we have a good example of how community and individual rights are working together in the church. We had some interesting examples of how the community of faith is reaching even way down into the south, into Florida, which is where we were for 5 days last week. Mark Kennel was in the hospital. That's Maureen's father, and we went to see him. He had a hip replaced. We surprised him. He looked great. He shook my hand and squeezed really hard. And then he told us all about you folks. Somehow the news of what's happening here is getting down there. The community is connected. Went to see my Aunt Mietta Mosier, who was always so good at including everybody in the community. You are part of a family. You are part of a group. You're not separated by yourself. And she talked about her brother-in-law, Ed, Arnold Mosier's brother, Ed Mosier, who visited this congregation a few weeks ago and went to see his father's farm, which is currently being, the sugar bush, which is currently being operated by Evans there, and that just really moved him emotionally. And Mietta told me that he feels a connection to this community, this congregation, that has been solidified in the last few months of his trips that are up here. So here's all this community stuff happening. So for the Apostle Paul, if there was anything that brought harm to the community and put the focus into a section where it should not go, he didn't want to see that happen. And he also didn't say people who are unable to work. He said people who are unwilling to work. And he also didn't mention economic status. Didn't mention that these are poor people necessarily that are causing trouble. We did not worry. There's something wrong with Connie and I, by the way, because when we were down in Florida, it was 80 degrees, sun was shining, I was in my lifeguard chair, and heard the forecast for northern New York, possibly 8 to 12 inches of snow. Do you know what our first response was? Oh, man, we should be there for that. We're going to miss that. What is wrong with us? I don't know. Part of it's work-related. Things happen when it gets cold at Maple Ridge that aren't always good, and I need to be checking up on that. But so there we were. I was not worried about our driveway getting cleared because I am wealthy enough that when we bought that house, we purchased a snowplow contract for the driveway. And I've been spoiled by that. I shoveled my own driveway for years, but now my economic status has improved. And if you all should choose as a community to raise my salary high enough, I'd be able to afford someone to cook meals for us, to clean the house, to paint my house, maybe to provide a limo ride to church on Sunday morning. So you can see how lazy a wealthy person could be. And sometimes it's a joke. There have been opportunities in my life when a group of us will see somebody maybe doing their own work, washing their own car, and we say, boy, that's the first time we've seen him work in a while. He usually has everybody else do his work for him. So we don't know who was causing the trouble in the community in Paul's times, but it's clearly some persons who, let's say they weren't carrying their share of the load, or they were bringing something into the community that was not healthy. There was also something in Roman culture called the patron system. This almost sounds like something that could happen in our political times. There were people in the community who were sort of the eyes and ears of the Roman government. And there was a patron in the Roman government that would provide them with food and shelter and take care of their needs as long as they kept an eye on people, make sure that everything was going okay for the empire. And it could be that some of these people were coming into the church causing trouble. They didn't need to work. Their things were all provided for them. And perhaps they were introducing some of the cultic practices or some of the pagan worship that the Roman government had. That may have been a bit of an issue. There's another thing, and I'm going to ask Isaac if he would fire up the internet here. And if you have your smartphones with you, you can do this as well. It's always good to maybe turn off your phones during worship, but smartphones are here to stay, and maybe we're going to use them. And you're going to find out how easy it is to prepare a sermon with a good point in it while sitting by a lifeguard chair in the pool. So, Isaac, go to textweek.com, and you can do this on your little device here. And this is a website that Adam pointed out to me when he was in seminary, and I've been using this. So scroll down onto the right-hand side to November 17. That is today's date. It's my sister's, should go a little farther. Yeah, there we go. It's her 60th birthday today. Somebody else is having a significant birthday today, too, but we won't talk about that till later. There we go. Click on that. Here are the lectionary passages for today. We've already read from Psalm 98. That's the second one down. 2 Thessalonians 3, 6 through 13. That's what Betsy read. So click on that, the bold part there. And here's all kinds of articles on this passage that can be used in sermon preparation. So go down a little bit. Let's see if any of these look like they're interesting. Okay, here's somebody. Let's see. No, I'm not seeing what I want to see here. Go a little. Oh, wait. What's up top there? Yeah, keep going down a little bit. I would have to use one that doesn't show up there. Go back up again, Isaac. You see how hard it is to prepare a sermon these days? You all think you can do this, don't you? Oh, I see it. Okay, Miriam Camel, that one right there. It's right at the bottom of the screen. In today's heated climate of disputes over universal health care and a social safety net, this verse has seemingly taken on a life of its own. That sounds interesting. Click on that. Let's see what she says about this. Sorry it took me so long to find this. Okay, you probably can't really read that. But there's an interesting point there in the second paragraph. The second sentence of the second paragraph, it says, both verses 6 and 11 use a rare term that only occurs in these two verses of the New Testament to describe the problematic ones in the community. Many translations have opted for lazy or idle, but it goes on in the rest of the paragraph to say a better translation is disorderly or disruptive. There, thank you, Isaac. You can click all that off. That's how you prepare a sermon and get paid big bucks for it. It works out pretty good. When you put the words disorderly or disruptive in there, which according to this Bible scholar is a more accurate interpretation, that changes how we view that verse, doesn't it? Interesting that those are the only two places in the New Testament which use that word. And it has made some people wonder, did Paul even write this? Well, at the very end of this letter, Paul says that he is writing the greeting with his own hand. So there's evidence that maybe Paul was dictating to someone else to write this. And maybe that person said, use this word. Who knows? But there you go. Being disorderly and disruptive. That would harm the community, and Paul wouldn't want to see that. Now, at our board meeting yesterday for the Adirondack Mennonite Camping Association, there are some rumors that at one time were floating around about how Beaver Camp and Maple Ridge were handling certain issues that have applied to our culture, and the rumors weren't true, but it caused a little bit of angst, and we had to reassure ourselves that we were on the right path, and we felt good about that. Rumors kind of hurt. Gossip is not a good thing. Have you heard any rumors or gossip about our congregation lately and how we're approaching social issues? I've heard some that aren't true. I have a word for such persons who spread this kind of talk: busybodies and meddlers. There, I said it, and I'm not taking it back either. And I said it right in front of our district minister, too, so if there's a problem here, he'll let me know. Rumors and gossip can tear a congregation apart. And it sounds like in Paul's time, this might be a little bit what they were facing. And he wanted to put a stop to that. He says, no more of this kind of idleness. And he uses the word busybodies. There's also another problem that we are aware in Paul's culture, and it's somewhat the same that we have today a little bit. There were itinerant preachers who were traveling around. Maybe they had TV shows or radio shows, and they would go from congregation to congregation and give their agenda to what they thought the community should be doing. And it turns out these itinerant preachers were pretty good about asking for financial support. And when they wanted transportation to the next town, they would ask for a red Corvette to get from this town to the other town. And if, for those of you who weren't here a year and a half ago, at that particular time, there was one of these itinerant pastors that is well known in our culture that was asking his followers for his fifth jet plane to get from town to town. And I assured you as a congregation, I do not want a jet plane. I'd be very happy with a red Corvette if you want to do that. Well, it was my birthday, and for those of you who weren't here, I came out to go to church on Sunday morning and a red Corvette pulls into my driveway. Pat O'Brien, the owner of the theater downtown, says, "Are you Keith?" "Yes." "Happy birthday. I'm your ride for the day." And there is me in the Corvette. There's Pat driving it. And that is the parking lot of the Lowellville Mennonite Church. So anytime anybody wants to spread a rumor about our congregation and be a busybody and a meddler, spread this kind of rumor. The pastor of the Lowellville Mennonite Church is provided with a red Corvette by the congregation. I would love for that rumor to go. And then the next photo, that family by the car, that's the ones who set this up. That explains it all, doesn't it? Sonny and Pat are acquainted, and he put that all together. And Bella, she gave me a little red Corvette, and I remember sitting it right there, and I can't find it. And that is really bothering me. I'm missing that more than just about anything. But the idea of itinerant preachers that are disrupting congregations and maybe preaching something that isn't solid to the community, maybe bringing in a new idea, we have a history of that here in northern New York. Outsiders coming in and maybe changing the way we think about things a little bit, and sometimes that's for the better, sometimes it's not. That was probably happening during Paul's time. And then there's also the idea, which is why Thessalonians was written in the first place. They were expecting Christ to return any second. Their understanding was that he would be coming soon, and Paul had to write to the Thessalonians and say, even if Christ doesn't come immediately, never get tired of doing what is good. Let's keep working. There were some who said, why bother? Why do we even need to work? Why do we need to save the planet? God's going to destroy it all anyway. That's a part of some people's theology. So verse 13, I think, is a good conclusion for this, that never cease doing what is good. There's a Bridges Out of Poverty training that both Adam and Connie were a part of here a couple weeks ago. And Stephanie Hauser-Faust, part of our congregation, she's actually the leader of this particular training here in Lewis County. And I sat under this training several months ago when it was at the Maple Ridge Center, and I learned a lot of things about those who are in poverty, that those who do not have the same privileges that I do in our society. I drive by certain houses, and I know that there are people who live there who don't have a lot of money, and they're all congregated on the porch, sitting around talking. Why is that? Well, there's a reason for that. I've noticed that when someone doesn't have a lot of money, they somehow find a way to afford a cell phone and a big screen TV. Why is that? Well, there's reasons for that. I've learned that people's speech patterns, you know, if someone could just talk a little better and present a little bit more of a professional attitude in their speech, that would help. And sometimes persons in poverty don't talk like that. Why is that? Well, there are good reasons for that. Probably one of the things that's helped me the most as I work with people in the community, I get a little frustrated when I've helped someone maybe last month and they don't seem to remember that. They want help again. And when I explain, well, this is what can help you in the future and plan for this and this, they don't seem to hear that either. Why is that? Well, there's good reasons for that. All that to say that there are a lot of things that go on in people's minds that we don't always know and we don't understand. And I believe it's our plan that on January 5th, we are going to have an afternoon session for a couple of hours, and Adam is going to share a little bit of that training with you all to help us to be more effective in how we work to keep the community together. I think that's a good thing to remember. Set policies that benefit the entire community. And so I understand there's cake and ice cream after church today. That makes us feel part of the community. Thank you. We hope, the pastors do, that when it's Congregation Appreciation Month in February, and there's a joke about that too, that we make you all feel part of the community. And above all, as the Apostle Paul says, brothers and sisters, do not be weary in doing what is right. Let's keep trying to do the right thing. We'll get there eventually.